Where'd you get those shoes? Easy. They're from DSW. Because DSW has the exact right shoes for whatever you're into right now. You know, like the sneakers that make office hours feel like happy hour. The boots that turn grocery aisles into runways. And all the styles that show off the many sides of you, from daydreamer to multitasker and everything in between. Because you do it all in really great shoes. Find a shoe for every you at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Ah, can't you see it? A sparkling roadside EV quick charge power facility. It's chargers, control panels, and switchgear powering a renewable energy tomorrow that's squeaky clean. We know that unless you have the right supplier, that world might just be a fantasy. But here at Graybar, with years of renewables experience, we live in that world. Get in touch to see for yourself.
We're now ready to depart.
Book your visit at graybar.com. Yep, Graybar does that.
Wow. What's up? I just bought and financed a car through Carvana in minutes.
You? The person who agonized 4 weeks over whether to paint your walls eggshell or off-white bought and financed a car in minutes?
They made it easy. Transparent terms, customizable down and monthly. Didn't even have to do any paperwork.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Hey, have you checked out that spreadsheet I sent you for our dinner options?
Finance your car with Carvana and experience total control. Financing subject to credit approval.
All right, Mike Tomlin blathered on for about a half hour and change, and at times there were some pointed questions. I'd like to congratulate Ashley Leotis from Channel 4 for taking the gloves off a few times and asking some pointed questions.
We got to give her credit by crediting her actual name. We can't Connor Sheary her. Leotis.
Okay, Ashley Leotis. There you go. You're right. We should say her name correctly. I always forget that I say it wrong. And
yeah, so do I usually.
Appreciate that.
Well, see, now we're off to an awkward start. Let's get right into it. Come on.
So I went into Tomlin today with the same expectations I went into the Steelers playoff game. Very low ones. And I didn't expect he was going to say anything seismic, anything that was going to make me feel better about the direction of the Steelers, that we were going to get a lot of Tomlinisms, we were going to get a lot of cliches, we were going to get a lot of questions that were sidestepped or not fully answered. A lot of excuse making, blah, 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 blah. So I'll just start with what Schefter seemed to latch on to when he went on McAfee in the middle of all this, the biggest insider in the NFL. And that is the point Tomlin made about how change is part of this, and there's going to be change at a lot of levels. That when you have a season like this, in a string of seasons exactly like this, change is inevitable. I don't believe him. My faith and confidence in them doing the right thing in situations like this is so shaken and so disturbed and so out of balance. Like it's gotten to a point, and maybe people will hate this comparison. It's like when a politician talks. The BS meter is so off the charts that he said words are hollow. Yeah. And things like where when you say to us as the one common denominator here and one common thread, other than the owner who's not going anywhere, and what's happened with this team and their lack of postseason success and failing to meet their own standards, you promise or champion change when you're not going anywhere. I'm sorry. He said at one point he's not going to sell optimism. Congratulations on all your success. You did it today. You're right. You did not make me feel any better about where this team is headed. I don't buy any of this tough talk.
Because talk is cheap.
Yes.
Talk is cheap, and nobody who has the power to do anything, either in Art Rooney's case, seems to want to make decisions that are tough that bring about real change. And in Mike's case, as long as Art doesn't want to or doesn't see a need to, why would Mike? I felt like most of it was Mike just saying, oh yeah, all this sounds good. Everything I'm going to say, you know, at the Adam Schefters of the world, for example, can put it out there, can regurgitate it, can, you know, say, ooh, Mike is really putting his foot down, planting a flag here. Any of us that have seen it for the last, you know, damn near a decade now, know that it's just not real. Know that next year it is way more likely that the Steelers of 2025 resemble strongly in both how they play and what results they get, the Steelers of 2024 and the Steelers of 2023, and so on, back and back and back we go. Like, I don't know. Why would anybody, other than maybe a couple little high points where he gets a question he doesn't expect, or he gets a very pointed question that people really did want to hear asked, why anybody would go into this thinking it would be anything other than the usual exercise from him?
He said, this is football justice. You get what you deserve. You reap what you sow. It's so ironic that he says it when he is now someone that's presided over the longest active playoff losing streak in the NFL. They're tied with the Dolphins, but that spans decades, and obviously the same coach has not been there the entire time. He is one of only four coaches that have been given this amount of leeway or this amount of leash with consecutive seasons without a playoff win. There's only three other guys who weren't either forced to retire or fired by their organization. So where's the football justice in that? It's
football justice is getting a three-year extension and a raise after last year when you did the same thing you always do.
There's no soul searching. There's no real looking into the mirror.
No introspection whatsoever.
Exactly. And there's no, despite this change comment, there's no real belief that heads are going to roll at all.
His answer when he was asked about coaching staff changes was to parrot the thing we always talk about.
Well, some guys don't have years left on their contract.
Right.
Is that what you're about to say?
Yes, yep. Because we know the only way you get fired is if you are either stupefyingly incompetent, and at that point it was Canada and Kenny both under the broiler, or your contract doesn't get renewed. Like, you don't really get fired from the Steelers if you're a coach. It's an appointment for the dirt. Like, you know how there are non-guaranteed contracts in the NFL, obviously? You say, well, how much is the actual guarantee? You sign a contract to coach the Pittsburgh Steelers, whatever position you're coaching, damn near 100% chance you can take all that money to the bank because you're going to see every dime of it. As an employee, you know what I mean? Not like Canada still seeing every dime, but you know what I mean. You're going to be employed for the duration of that contract.
Donnie, your take on what we heard a few hours ago here.
I also just want to touch on something that you guys haven't yet that I thought, and Chris and I had the conversation in the back. Joe actually walked back at 1.2, and all three of us talked about it. The way that the head coach talks about the owner as if they are more so partners, and it's not, this guy's my boss. Like, there is absolutely no fear that anything will happen to his position.
I mean, if anything, I think
that is how secure he is in his spot, where he's talking about it more like, this is my buddy, my partner in crime, more so than if I don't perform, this guy will let me go.
Donnie, don't you think Art has more in recent years telegraphed that he, as the owner, feels fortunate to be able to call Mike the coach? If
Absolutely.
Anything, the power structure is inverted from what it would normally be.
Well, and Omar has said that to us, too, right. Where he just feels like he's so lucky and grateful that he gets to work with Mike Tomlin.
But guys, in this organization, I know the GM would normally be above the coach in any other one. In this one, the coach is absolutely above the GM in the power structure. And that goes back to Cowher's time when he won the power struggle with Tom Donahoe.
And I don't really blame Tomlin for talking that way, because that has been just the culture that it has become, where there is no reason to fear for his job.
I have one more. I know that we have many little parts to drill down into here, Pony, but like a broad takeaway, one other question, like answer that he gave stood out to me. I forget who asked the question, but it was essentially like, does your offense need to be more like retooled to better equipped to handle shootouts and get into shootouts? And essentially it was like to be more of a passing offense, right?
Mm-hmm.
Score more points. He said, well, certainly we need to score more points. And then he said, and this just, I don't know, to me, the devil's in the details here as far as stubbornness and, like, resistance to change. However that may be, like, I am not going to concede that the way we play offense can't score points. I'm just going to imply that there's a lot of ways to skin a cat. We just have to be better at ours. Even though their way of doing it this year was both inefficient and just ill-advised.
To go back to what Donnie said about the way Mike sounds like a guy that he says the word urgency several times, but there actually isn't any urgency and there's no accountability, which was another thing that came up about him having accountability with Rooney, the players being accountable to him, etc. the way he answered the trade question, just scoffing at it and batting it down like it's the most laughable thing of all time. All of these things that put more pressure on him are completely off the table, and he knows it. So he does get to strut around and, like a peacock, show his plumage and feathers and stuff, because despite these playoff failures and, you know, because people will say things like he actually overachieved this year, which doesn't really blame him at all for the lack of talent on the team or how bad their drafts have been over the last few years. It like makes him out to be Atlas, just carrying the Steelers world on his back and shoulders and somehow dragging it to respectability. The narratives are all out of whack. And he, I think he kind of, I won't say enjoys it, but he knows it.
He knows he is. It gives him refuge and it gives him cover.
It's not lost on me, flipping back and forth during the game last night, that I'm seeing Bill Belichick on with the Mannings, highlights of that, him at North Carolina, and it dawned on me, yes, they sunk to only 4 wins. Yes, Bill Belichick got Mac Jones wrong. But that guy got run out of New England after winning 6 Super Bowls for having, what, 3 underachieving seasons? 4? Even, I mean...
Well, that's where it goes back to the owner for me, Pony, because the owner and Belichick clearly weren't on the same page, and that's where Art Rooney's different.
Donnie posted the other day the timeline of like all the things that have happened to Doug Peterson since Tomlin's last playoff win. The guy's life has changed 4 or 5 times, including winning a Super Bowl in the middle of it.
Again, though, these are Art Rooney problems that like other coaches are held to much more aggressive standards. And Mike doesn't. Mike just gets to enjoy the current standard here, which is set by the guy above him, who, as Donnie pointed out, treats him more like his friend and like, what would you say, in an office, you're not superior or subordinate, well, you're just on equal footing.
They're peers.
They're just, yeah, a peer, thank you. So I do think when you bring up stuff like that, how Bill Belichick was treated at the end of New England, what the standard was for him.
But
that's Art Rooney stuff.
But obviously the paradigm shifted there because he went from running everything to being... you know, given a box with his belongings in it and shown the door. So it got to a breaking point, or it got to a point where the owner of the team said, enough is enough. Somehow, after 8 straight seasons without a playoff win and 6 straight blowout losses in the postseason, the owner's nowhere close to that. And the coach, you know, is trying to say things, I think, to placate the masses, but it's not working. I don't think there's a human being out there that listened to that 35-minute press conference who's like, you know what? After hearing Mike, he cooled me down. He's right. Okay, it was a minor setback. We'll get back at it this offseason.
What do you think is the overwhelming sentiment having listened to it? I just if it's even anger, it's like the numb anger because you've just heard this and seen this before, and you know that there will be some new faces on this team next year, but that the person who sets the agenda and the person who grants or gives the team his identity.
The search for truth never ends. Introducing June's Journey, a hidden object mobile game with a captivating story. Connect with friends, explore the roaring 20s, and enjoy thrilling activities and challenges while supporting environmental causes. After 7 years, the adventure continues with our immersive travels feature. Explore distant cultures and engage in exciting experiences. There's always something new to discover. Are you ready? Download June's Journey now on Android or iOS.
Hey, football fans, it's Andrew Filippone, host of the First and Pod podcast. Join me and my co-host, 3-time All-Pro Patrick Peterson, as we break down every game every week. New episodes drop on Monday and Friday mornings. Be sure to subscribe on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
We'll be the same person.
I think changing in coaching staffs are a component of our business. I certainly don't think all of our coaches are under contract. Change is a component of it, and I acknowledge it, but we're at the very early stages of making those type decisions and discussions. How can we keep our team healthier? Was a discussion that happened yesterday, for example. We experienced a rash, a soft tissue injuries this year that was impactful. And that's just an example of many of the things and subjects that we have covered and will continue to cover.
Fan Hotline on this Tomlin Tuesday is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. So sounds like the conditioning coach who idiotically had Russell Wilson pushing a sled before training camp started, and subsequently he missed more than the first quarter of the season, could be a guy who gets scapegoated in all of this. Also, guys whose contracts have expired, they won't get renewed. And
where
that'll
that
probably be the
coach
extent
come
of it.
From?
From Boston College, where he coached.
Donnie? From Boston College, where he coached.
Dino.
Yeah.
Tomlin.
Thank you.
Checking on the Barber football focus grades.
We will hit on this Pickens bombshell report in The Athletic today and Mike Tomlin getting caught with his pants down when asked about it at his press conference today. 412-928-9370. Let's hear how you, the fan, reacted to what Mike Tomlin had to say today, how you're feeling about the state of the Steelers after hearing Mike Tomlin's final State of the Union address for this season. 412-928-9370. Going to start with Steven on the fan. Hello, Steven.
Hello.
Hi, Steve.
I didn't get to hear what he said, but I wanted to make a comment about the Steelers in the last decade and a half. They've been playing inferior teams and losing or getting beat up real bad or an outlier game. Now, if he can't achieve beating these inferior teams, why are we even talking playoffs or Super Bowls or anything else? He's had 15 years, and we always lose to inferior teams. We never go in and beat anyone up.
Well, they didn't play an inferior team in the playoffs this year, last year,
I think he's talking
the
about the regular season. I think he's talking about like losing to Arizona and New England back-to-back. He said, why even talk about the playoffs when he's losing to inferior teams? That's how I took it.
I thought the bigger problem this year was the way they performed against the great teams and how the gap between the two looked so stark and how they were basically non-competitive in those games to the tune of 90-40 during that three-game stretch against the Eagles, Ravens, and Chiefs at the end of the regular season. Bob is next. Hello, Bob.
Hi, guys. Before I get to Rooney, when you watch these Steelers play, if you have a elementary or high school even background, these defenders for the other teams are literally calling out the plays before they happen. After the games or in the halftime, they're even being told, if reported, I'm mocking them because how simple their offense is. And when you hear Tomlin on the sideline at the halftime, they say about, you know, what can you do, this, that, the other thing. He always says, well, it's not about scheme. We just got to do the routine things more routinely. He refuses to see. He has no competency on defense where they get skunked every year when it matters.
I have to just interject here and say, I can't believe I'm doing this. It's like the one thing they did well this year was make adjustments at halftime, and their third quarters were probably, if not the best in the NFL, very close. So that's probably the one complaint or the one criticism you can lob at Tomlin today that I'm going to disagree with. It's the way they started games, not the way that they adjusted in games.
But it's not how you start. It's how you finish. Unless you start so far down that finishing the game is a formality for the team beating your brains in.
Jeff is next. Hello, Jeff.
Hey, guys. Love the show. Forget Tomlin. It starts at Art the Second because he's an heir. He didn't build anything. He inherited the legacy. He inherited the team. He inherited his family's fortune. I worked for a guy that built a company, and he passed away, and the son inherited it. It was the same name on the business, but everything changed, and Art is, it's no fault of his. I mean, I'm a truck driver. I'm just a Steeler fan for 55 years, but I think it's at the very top, and if he's content to manage his fortune and legacy and, you know, what's he worth, $2 billion or more? God bless him. But his heart, I don't know.
No, I got you, Jeff. I think that what you're expressing is an issue that we all have, that there doesn't seem to be, from Art's spot, if he's going to keep Mike around, there doesn't seem to be ultimatums or parameters put on things or guidelines in place like, hey, this is what we want you to do. If you don't do that, you're going to
I think
you're
he trusts Mike with the football stuff and feels like he knows it better than Art himself does, and therefore I'm not going to put football terms on this guy. And I think Dan Rooney wasn't – I know Dan Rooney wasn't afraid to do that. And also when you become an owner who I do think prioritizes and values this idea of consistency and conservative thought when it comes to like hiring and firing coaches over actual results – that's when you get stuck in the mud, and that's where he is, and that's where they are.
Well, yes, they prioritize stability over success.
I mean, I think the word I've used often is fetishized it. Like, they've acted like this is our brand now. We're the brand that never fires coaches.
Yes, caller Paul yearned for the days of when Dan Rooney and Art Rooney were here.
I'm a kid that watched Franco and Joe Green and Chuck Knoll, and I remember Ernie Holmes shooting at cars on the turnpike. You know? I mean...
what a
where
memory.
Is your pride?
Those were the real Steelers back then.
Yes.
You know,
longing
Dad,
for those days.
You know, Dad, I just miss the days when you could pick up a box score and see Franco and Rocky going off for 100 yards.
I just love
the days.
Holmes
on the A1 page.
When you could pull up a police blotter and see a 70 Steelers name in there.
That's actually, that call is almost the kind of tweet that like the Super 70 sports guy would make. Take me back to when the Steelers were real men. Franco and Joe Green, Ernie Holmes firing at police helicopters, that kind of thing.
Dave is in Cannonsburg. Hello, Dave.
Hi. First of all, I'm pretty tired with Tomlin. His act's getting pretty old, and I'm sure it's getting old with a lot of the players, too. One thing I wanted to mention, though, is in-game decisions. Nobody that I've heard mentioned this in the Ravens game. He called a timeout on 3rd and 2 at the end of the first half where the Ravens gained a couple yards on 1st down, a couple on 2nd down. They weren't calling timeouts. They were content to go in 14-0, or if they picked up a 1st down, maybe they'd get down there in field goal range. Tomlin calls a timeout. Is it more likely that the Ravens will make 3rd and 2 or that we'll get the ball back?
But they baited him into it. We talked about they baited him into it and buried him with it.
And it goes back to a stubborn insistence or irrational belief that his defense is going to rise up and come up clutch in moments like that when their playoff history suggests otherwise, regardless of how much money they're spending on the defense, what the big names are playing in the defense, and how full of himself as a defensive head coach Mike Tomlin is. Yeah, I thought that was an astute observation. Yeah, we'll get the stop here on 3rd and 2, and we're going to go quickly and score, and we're going to take the momentum into the half.
I have a cliche that the guys oftentimes throw back at me in jest, but it's true. 2 is a pattern. And I say that because there's an expiration date on adjusting and adapting. I use that phrase to reflect urgency, to reflect how quickly it is we need to adapt and adjust and move. And so we've had similar results. Rest assured that we're not doing the same things, hoping for a different result. We have adapted. We have altered our approach, and we will continue because we're not getting what we seek. And that's the confetti game, is to be world champs. Our goals are really clear. It's also really clear that we're falling short of it and falling short of it in a consistent way. And so we're still going to continue to be open to adapting our behavior, our program, the structure of what it is that we do, to turn over every stone in an effort to get what we desire. That's just the appropriate and mature way to approach it.
PM team, Tomlinism of the week, the final time. The confetti game. He can't say Super Bowl. He has to give it some other nickname. That's the essence of Tomlinism.
Is that like
Tomlinism's.
The Squid Game?
Never seen Squid Game. Have you, Don? Sarah getting into Squid Game on Netflix?
Yeah, what do they do on the Squid Game? A lot of people die, I think.
Their faces look like PlayStation buttons.
Okay. It doesn't tell me a lot.
You know, like the X's and boxes.
I would think that the Squid Game would be Amanda would be into it.
She's watched it. I don't watch it with her.
Alex does not. Alex has descended fully into the realm of books. She said things recently like...
She reads the fantasy smut books, right?
Yeah, and she's like proud of that. She's like, "Oh, my friends and I, you know, basically like mounting up to read some more like smut, and like they're just like ready to go. Time for more smut." No. There's one that Pony. We have a calendar now that she bought that like mirrors our Google calendar so that the two of us can see what's, you know, it's an electronic one.
Yeah.
There are book releases.
Oh boy.
On the calendar. Like 3 a.m.
I'm not
book
watching
drops.
Squid Game. I watch the Monday night playoff game, and then after that I watched the 1974 Steelers Bills playoff
you
game.
You actually did?
Yeah.
Like recently?
Last night.
Oh, after last night's game. Okay. Yeah. I read All Quiet on the Western Front after last night's game.
No, you did not.
Yeah, dead serious. What I don't read as fast as you. You could knock that book off in a night. I like reread parts of dialogue.
I thought Remarque was a little dry in that book. I don't need to go
back.
Well,
I've got to compare
it.
That with Storm of Steel. Have you ever read that?
No.
Very dry. Again, very dry in German. By the way, contained in that Tomlinism of confetti game is, I think, one of the most offensive parts of the entire press conference. The two is a pattern thing. Mike, what's eight?
I would have asked that question. I would have said that. I would have blurted it right out. Okay.
And I'm kind of surprised that, Ashley Lyotis didn't ask that question, because like she in there, I think, or Will Graves, like there are people in there who I think would blurt that out.
Also, when he talks about adapting and evolving, he hasn't. His ability to manage games late, his challenge acumen, the style in which he wants to win, which since Ben left is with defense and trying to expend so many resources to defense. And to only have that defense crapped on and kicked on and laughed at in these playoff games.
I mean, even when Ben was still here for the last 2 years, I think that they tried to be a defense-first team because he wasn't the same player he had previously been.
Yeah, true.
So, and really they tried to supplement for him with offensive players in a very ill-fated draft. Like cheap offensive talent. Hey, we've already got the defensive guys locked up and paid.
Here is the runner-up for Tomlinism of the week. When Mike was asked about defensive players blaming each other and pointing the finger at each other late in the season.
I've never been around a prideful unit that doesn't bicker when things aren't going well. Bickering is not always a negative thing. Bickering is a cleansing. Bickering is a gaining of understanding. But sometimes, particularly in today's sport culture, is presented as somewhat of a negative thing. It's not. These guys play hard, they live hard, they love hard, they talk hard, they communicate hard. That's the world we live in. And so what is viewed as from the outside as potentially a negative isn't always a negative from those that are involved. It's very necessary in an effort to gain clarity or a cleansing or an understanding sometimes.
They love hard.
I mean, that was basically what former Fan Afternoon host John Seibel said about a team. He said they play hard, they care hard, and we all kind of chuckled.
Love hard.
Donnie, what was the one movie, the fake like John C. Reilly movie, Walk Hard, the Dewey Cox story? The fake like Johnny Cash Walk the Line ripoff. I mean, what, come on, man, what is that?
Here is Mike in Morningside back with us. Hello, Mike.
Hey guys. I really feel bad. The Cowboys going to get replaced again this year. The cleat changer. And then I think what we really need to do is next year we need to change the mascot, because this is getting to be like we need Eeyore, because it's going to be, okay, Mike, here we go again. Just another season, one and done.
Steely McBeam on the chopping block.
Would it surprise either of you to know
that's the big change coming?
Would it surprise either one of you to know that one of my mother's nicknames for me since I was probably like a teenager or like preteen was Eeyore?
No.
Donnie?
Remember when we made fun of the Steely McBeam update so bad they went back to the original?
Because we had the lady who originally coined the name on the show.
Look at the... what looked like almost like a hipster version
of
McBeam.
She made the smart observation that the OG Steely looked like Bill Cowher.
And the new one looked more like
Tomlin.
They
tried to make it look more like Mike Tomlin, but it just didn't work.
It was too urbane and suave.
It didn't, yeah. Dave in Delmont, who usually has positive things to say about the Steelers, is next. Hello, Dave.
Very funny. Thank you for taking my call.
Yep.
For 4 years now, I've been calling for him to leave. I had to listen to that today. I had to shut it off. I couldn't take it anymore. For him to stand up there and say that they might need some organizational changes and not really understand that he's the one, the sole person that's been here for the last 8 years, and he's the reason, he's the problem, and not one reporter would just ask, hey, do you think maybe there should be a change at the top?
I mean, I think that he was asked that.
I just wanted one reporter to say that.
I think he was asked a question that, Dave, that more or less was like, do you think you're the right guy for the job? He didn't get asked straight away, Mike, do you think you deserve to be the Steelers head coach? But he got asked about as close as you'll ever hear to something like that.
Here is Ethan next. Hello, Ethan.
Hey, guys. Thanks for taking my call. I'll be quick. I just wanted to get your take on when Tomlin said save it today when asked about his no-trade clause. Do you guys think that he wouldn't waive his no-trade clause, or do you think he's been
I think he loves being the head coach of the Pittsburgh Steelers because he knows that there is no more stable and secure job in coaching anywhere.
And if he's sent somewhere, the optics of it are like he failed, he didn't get the job done, and he needs a fresh start or a new beginning somewhere because of the way things ended here, and he doesn't want that.
Do you think he's been given assurances by ownership that he won't be traded?
Yeah, because he has a no-trade clause. He negotiated into his deal.
They couldn't do it without his say-so, and I think the more pressing question is, does he have an assurance from the owner that he's not going anywhere? Yes.